Google announced lots of new Gemini features at Mobile World Congress. Anticipation is building as Intel previews the next generation Xeon Clearwater Forest. NVIDIA is booming in the data center and AI markets. Hammerspace is delivering a training file system that's really fast. Juniper is getting sued over their buyout. Mobile World Congress is focused on AI and 5G. And in our Closer Look segment, we're going to talk a lot about the latest moves from VMware and Broadcom, including EUC being sold off to private equity and Carbon Black potentially being shuttered. All that on today's episode of the Gestalt IT Rundown. Welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown, where each time we meet, we run down the IT news of the week with a variable degree of snarkiness. I'm your host, Tom Hollingsworth. Ha! No, I'm not. I'm Stephen Foskett. And joining me today, while Tom is out at networking field day, is good friend Ned Bellavance. Welcome to the show, Ned.
Thank you, Stephen. Excited to be here.
Well, it's always nice to have you here. It's always nice to get a different perspective than Tom brings to the show. And of course, we've always got new stories. But I must point out, as always, that we've got some very important holidays to look after. So today is not only National Chocolate Soufflé Day, it's also National Tooth Fairy Day. Do you think those are related?
One could certainly lead to the other.
I suppose so. But on National Park Day, why not go visit a national park? Here in Northeast Ohio, we have the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. What's your favorite national park?
I don't know if I have a favorite national park, but I'm partial to some of the state parks that are near me, and especially the running trails.
I know you are. You're a runner. I'm more of an indoor exerciser myself. But, you know, I still do like a good hike in the park.
Yeah.
So let's dive into the news of the week, starting, of course, with some of the announcements at NWC, which we're going to talk about a little bit more later. Google is continuing to catch up to Microsoft with the announcement of Gemini for Google Workspaces, among other announcements at Mobile World Congress. Naturally, they also had updates for Android, Android Auto, smartwatches, and all the other things that they've created and then renamed. Google's biggest obstacle may be naming, as their previous AI effort, Bard, is being renamed to Gemini, Duet AI for Workspaces is being renamed to Gemini, and everything else is being renamed to Gemini, including the watch. We're also getting a look at, we also got a look at this at AI Field Day in depth. What do you think of the announcement, Gemini?
Oh, thank you for asking, Gemini. It's a very, very interesting question. I think in terms of what they're trying to do, they're trying to do what Microsoft did with Copilot, which is take a brand of AI and kind of slather it over all their existing product portfolios. Now, Microsoft didn't have a bunch of AI stuff already in place across their portfolio, so adding Copilot felt like a natural extension of what they were already doing. But Google has had AI components for a long time in a bunch of their different products, and now they're renaming all of those things for maybe the third or fourth time. So looking at the technology itself, it does seem like their newest model of Gemini 1.0, and now there's 1.5. They've made some serious strides in how good the model is at producing useful information, content, etc. However, there's still going to be this huge naming confusion and which one should I pick? And they haven't found a way to simplify that. I don't know. Maybe they could ask Gemini. Intel's announcement of Microsoft as a Foundry customer got all the attention, but the preview of the next generation Xeon, codenamed Clearwater Forest, might actually be more important. Building on Sierra Forest, this new Xeon moves to the 18A process technology, RibbonFET, and PowerVIA, and brings in advanced packaging techniques like Foveros Direct 3D and EMIB 3.5D. Man, you made me read all of those words, Stephen. So can you tell me what do all those acronyms mean and why are they important?
Absolutely. Well, I can't 100% tell you what all those acronyms mean because you know how it goes. But I will say, Intel's Foundry Day was a big success. The company really did make a splash with Microsoft and others saying that they were going to give contracts to the Foundry business for $15 billion, which is just great. The other thing, though, was Gelsinger announcing that they're getting really good industry support across the board for their next generation stuff. And among the next generation stuff are all those things you just mentioned. So all that comes together really in this next generation product line, which is called Clearwater Forest. So what is Clearwater Forest? Well, first off, this is a Xeon series CPU. It's the successor to the Sierra Forest, which itself is really brand new. We've talked about Sierra Forest here on the rundown before, and the news there, the reason that's cool is that Sierra Forest packs as many as 288 cores on a single processor package. In other words, you can have a single socket CPU with 288 actual physical cores, not virtual cores. That is in line with what we're seeing with a lot of the new hyper-dense processing that's going on with ARM CPUs. Of course, AMD also has their Zen 4C, and they recently talked about Zen 5C, which is their compact core. But the Intel efficiency cores that they're using in the Xeon, they're way more compact. Intel is able to jam these things in, fill up a processor with them. Sierra Forest is promising a lot. Clearwater Forest basically takes that concept and goes completely to the next level. This brings all the cool stuff Intel can do. Number one, we've got their 18A process technology. You've heard of nanometers, you know, oh, this is 5, this is 3. Well, 18A is basically 1.8. It's kind of like further down there. Of course, none of those numbers actually line up to physical dimensions anymore. It's just basically how many transistors they can cram together and how closely they cram them together. So 18A also has all sorts of cool new technologies. So RibbonFET is the first new way of orienting and organizing those transistors physically after FinFET. So this is a really important move for energy efficiency. We've also got PowerVia, which is another important thing. I know it's kind of abstract, but essentially it's a new way of bringing the voltage into the chip that's more efficient, both in terms of packaging and power. We've also got other packaging technologies going on here in terms of how they're bonding these chips together, how they're combining them on the die, the physical interfaces. All of this is stuff that Intel has worked a very long time to bring to the market. And it looks like this next generation Clearwater Forest is going to finally, basically, it's going to be the perfect storm, bring all these things together in a Xeon CPU that Intel suggests is going to be way beyond anything AMD can do. That is huge industry news. So yeah, this is a game changer, asterisk, if it works. We're not really a financial program, but I think we have to talk about NVIDIA's financial results. They pulled in $22.1 billion last quarter, which is more than AMD's annual take. This is skewed incredibly toward the data center segment at $18.4 billion compared to just $2.9 billion for gaming. This shows how important the AI market is for NVIDIA, since that's part of that segment. And yet, the H200, which they also talked about, promises even more capability. But this is a competitive market. We know that AMD is aggressively moving toward it. We've heard a lot about Grok this week. Of course, Intel is right there trying offering alternative visions for AI processors as well. There's all sorts of people talking about NVIDIA potentially stumbling. What do you think here, Ned? What's your take on their position in the market and their prospects for the future?
NVIDIA has taken their time to build a solid platform and portfolio of products. It's not like they just stumbled into GPUs and AI. This is something they've been doing for years. And for a long time, their focus really was GPUs and the gaming market. So it's amazing to see how small the gaming market is versus what AI is doing now. So I think they have the solid technical chops and the know-how to continue this growth and improvement on their platform. So I'm not necessarily worried about them stumbling. The H200, just reading through the specs on it, looks like it's going to be ridiculous in terms of performance. And I'm sure they already have the H300 or whatever the next generation is going to be in the works. I think it's important to also acknowledge that AI as a segment in general is growing. So there's still a bigger pie to be sliced up amongst all the competitors. So it doesn't necessarily require NVIDIA to falter for AMD or Grok or any of these other AI chip makers to be successful. I would also say that Microsoft is probably the biggest buyer of NVIDIA hardware to date, because they basically host OpenAI on Azure. And so that requires a lot of GPUs, and they've basically bought whatever they can get out of NVIDIA and realized that that is a potential liability and risk for them. So they're looking to diversify as well and starting up their own project to design AI chips. And I believe AWS is doing the same thing. Google already has their own chips. So I think what we're going to see is that NVIDIA will continue to be the leader in the market for the foreseeable future. I don't see them faltering. What I do see is the market continuing to grow and other entrants in the market making their own, carving out their own niche, whether it's LLM specific chipsets or just something that they run in-house for their hyperscale cloud. Hammerspace unveiled what it calls Hyperscale NAS, a new storage architecture that functions as a bridge between GPU-based AI processors and storage infrastructure. The technology combines the characteristics of an HPC file system and an enterprise NAS, promising high performance and scalability for AI training, GPU computing, and unstructured data processing. Hammerspace presented this technology in a product launch last week, including presenting at AI Field Day. So, Stephen, I think you were present for some of this. What did you make of the announcement?
Well, I have to say that this is an incredible announcement, and I'm going to get a little storage nerdy here, so sorry about that. So one of the things that, for basically the history of storage, there's been sort of, two flavors of scaling. There's, as you know, there's scale up, there's scale out. But also, honestly, there's, normal scaling and normal clients. And then there's hyperscale, HPC, and AI demands. And that stuff is completely different. It's a totally different workload. So, you know, if you were going to start a bus company, yeah, you could buy a bunch of vans, but wouldn't it be better to buy a bus? And that's kind of the situation where the hyperscalers are in, and especially in the HPC market and the AI training market. If you look at what they're doing for storage, they're not using conventional storage systems. They're not using conventional storage arrays. They're not even really using conventional storage protocols, though there is some relationship. Essentially, the challenge in the HPC market is that you have a lot of clients. And I don't just mean a lot like, oh, we have a lot of servers in our data center. No. You have tens of thousands of clients. And those tens of thousands of clients, unlike the data center, they're all accessing roughly the same data. In fact, it's conceivable that literally every system could access any piece of data all at the same time. No conventional storage system can handle that. So what Hammerspace has done is they've kind of invented an entirely new thing that brings sort of the conventional NAS storage that we're used to in the data center, but makes it massively, massively parallel and scalable. And what that means is that Hammerspace can now serve the needs of HPC and AI training with more conventional data on the back end. And as we talked about literally in every session at AI Field Day, we've gotten to the point now where LLMs are pretty good, but it's become incredibly clear that LLMs need really, really good data for training, for inferencing, for regular everyday use. And Hammerspace is basically bringing a technology that allows them to have the kind of performance and scalability that they need, along with the more conventional approach of enterprise storage. This, importantly, is a layer that sits in front of other storage systems. So it doesn't mean that Hammerspace is, you know, competing with all those companies that are making NAS and SAN and all this kind of stuff. No, what they're doing is they're basically building a bridge that allows all that stuff to work. And importantly, this is also a bridge because, hey, this is Hammerspace we're talking about. This is also a bridge that connects a diverse back end of storage systems into a uniform front end that could even be in a hyperscaler or in a, you know, off-prem kind of data center. it allows all that data to be accessed. And so it solves a lot of problems. And I really think that this thing is going to take off. And honestly, they don't really talk about kind of who's using their technology, but I'm hearing that most of the big AI training systems are actually either adopting or have already adopted Hammerspace technology. So that's pretty neat. Basically, the company came along at just the right time with just the right product that's pretty attractive in this market. We talked a little bit on a previous episode of The Rundown about the news that HPE is buying Juniper Networks. Well, now Juniper Networks is being sued in federal court over alleged omissions and misrepresentations in the proposed transaction filing for stockholders. The complaint alleges that Juniper didn't properly present financial analysis performed by Goldman Sachs. And also the deal says said, according to these people, to favor executives at Juniper, with huge golden parachutes going to them if they choose to leave, and a massive buyout of their private stock and RSUs. Now, I think there's always legends and rumors that that's how this happens in transitions, but I think that there are laws against this, and we're not lawyers, but what do you think, Ned? What's your take on this story?
Yeah, big disclaimer up front. We are not lawyers. So I'm not going to try to present any legal opinions here. I just want to talk a little bit about the facts that we have on the ground. And I read through the complaint that was filed a little bit. So as background, many listeners already know that HPE has entered into an agreement to purchase Juniper for $14 billion at a price of $40 per share for common stock. And in terms of regulations and the deal going through, there hasn't been any signal that any government entity is going to block this merger. They're like, yep, okay, go ahead. Don't see any problems with that. But this is putting a little bit of a wrinkle in things. And basically, one of the larger stockholders has filed suit in federal court saying, you've misrepresented to the common stock holders who are going to vote on this. You've misrepresented the transaction. And this is favoring the executives at Juniper much more heavily than us common stock shareholders. And so we don't like that. And we would like a judgment against Juniper for doing this. They're not trying to scuttle the deal, but I think they are trying to get some relief in terms of monetary relief when the deal does go through. And to give you an idea of some of the numbers that they're kicking around here, in the complaint, they talk about the number of RSUs, so restricted stock units, and also private stock units that some of the executives hold. And collectively, they hold about 4.6 million shares of this private and RSU stock. And as part of the deal, those shares are all going to be bought out by HP. It's an all-cash deal, and they're going to get money for those things. How much money? Well, it's a lot. Rami Rahim, who's the CEO of Juniper, is set to receive something on the order of $53 million for his privately held stock. And also, as part of the proposed transaction, there's a financial analysis that was done by Goldman Sachs, but that was not presented in detail in the missive that went out to the common stock shareholders. So they're not able to do a proper financial analysis on their own to determine if this is a good deal for them. So the complaint is interesting. I don't think it's going to block the merger in any way, but it could shift the financial compensation that happens within the deal. Mobile World Congress is an incredible event every year with lots of consumer announcements, including expandable screens and an actual flying car. Finally, we've reached Jetson's level of technology. But there's lots coming out of the show for enterprise and cloud as well, and Futurum sent a team to cover this. It seems that everyone is talking about 5G again, and though it's more about private and fixed networks this year, and there's lots about Wi-Fi 7 too, but of course, we're hearing about AI also. So what's the enterprise take on MWC, Stephen?
Well, there's a lot coming out, and I'm still listening. I'm still tuning in. It's still happening as we speak. New announcements all the time. Check out the futurumgroup.com for reports from the event. But what I can say from an enterprise perspective, the things that are catching my eye are, again, this whole world of private 5G. Now, as you know, I mean, we were talking about 5G like 5 years ago at MWC, and yeah, we're still talking about it. I've got 5G in my pocket. You probably do too. 5G technology, though, can extend way beyond what we've seen. So private 5G is basically an evolution of what we've seen previously with private LTE. This is something we've seen a lot at our mobility field day events and so on. Essentially, you're taking this off-the-shelf technology, which, you know, it's good technology, and you're enabling it to be used in more places. So we're seeing Cisco and Intel trying to accelerate the adoption of private 5G in enterprise and industry by opening up these innovation centers, including at Cisco's own campus, but also in Germany and Japan, to basically give customers the chance to trial the products, to show what they can do, and importantly, well, for Cisco and Intel, to adopt more of their technology in this emerging space. I think it's a great idea. Private 5G is coming, whether we, you know, regardless of what we say. Similarly, we're seeing a lot of talk of private 5G and chipsets from, you know, the big companies like, of course, Qualcomm, which makes a lot of these devices. Another area that we're seeing a lot of talk is Wi-Fi 7. Now, this technology is just barely being standardized. Tom has been bringing it to you here on the rundown. But Wi-Fi 7 is going to be rapidly rolled out with 6 gigahertz spectrum and more throughput, more everything than Wi-Fi 6. One of the things that caught my eye, though, there is that we're looking at automotive-grade Wi-Fi 7. This is kind of a cool thing. You know that cars are becoming more connected, but essentially what's happening here, just like in the 5G space, is that industry and automotive industry is adopting consumer technology in a unique way. You can't just like throw a consumer grade Wi-Fi chip into a car and expect it to work real well. And of course, cars have lots of real time and, you know, troubling failure scenarios if you're relying on this technology. So it's cool to see companies like Qualcomm focused on bringing Wi-Fi technology into the automotive grade market. And I think we're going to see a lot more like that, though, and you didn't hear the news, not in an Apple car, because they canceled that yesterday. Another key technology that I'm taking a look at, of course, is AI. Like we said, we just did the AI Field Day event. We learned a lot about the market. One of the things we learned at AI Field Day, and what was emphasized by Intel at AI Field Day, was that the inferencing market is, well, it's just starting to hit. Now, you've heard a lot about AI PCs. I'm sure that you're thinking about AI on mobile devices as well. Well, that's all an example of inferencing. Basically, once the models have been trained in these massive data centers full of GPUs, there's going to be people using these models every single day on local devices, you know, in their hands, not in the cloud or in the data center. And that means that the inferencing market is probably even bigger, if you can believe it, than the data center market for AI chips. Apple is right there with lots of incredible AI features on their M-series processors and A-series processors. Intel has been talking a lot about the abilities of their processors to process machine learning, large language models on device. We've heard the same from AMD. Well, now we're hearing it a lot more from from Qualcomm. Qualcomm, of course, makes the processors for, well, most of the world's phones and IoT devices. And I think there was some worry that Qualcomm was maybe going to be caught unawares and fall behind in terms of TensorFlow and AI processing. Well, they're not. Qualcomm is right there. They're adding tons of features to their famous Snapdragon processors. We'll start seeing those everywhere. They're also being smart in adding an AI library that allows the device to properly use what resources it has and use popular models. So we're seeing models in their AI hub, including things like Whisper, which I use every day. It's a speech-to-text engine. It works great. ControlNet, Stable Diffusion, which you've heard. All of these will run on mobile devices directly and take advantage of Qualcomm's NPU engine to accelerate instead of just hitting the CPU. That's going to be seen basically everywhere on IoT devices and beyond. So what we're seeing at Mobile World, of course, is flying cars and folding screens and all sorts of crazy stuff. But we're also seeing lots of examples of technology coming to market in a really practical way. Now, let's take a closer look at a big news story. And frankly, this week we chose the continuing evolution of VMware as our closer look story. Of course, we've spoken quite a lot about this recently, but things are happening here that I think we should talk about. So in a series of bold moves, Broadcom is restructuring VMware. They're shifting to subscription-only licenses across everything. And Broadcom CEO Hock Tan has clearly moved his vision of VMware to focus on resiliency, on developer efficiency, on infrastructure efficiency, and basically try to focus the company on those specific markets instead of doing all the things that VMware used to do. He recently outlined three key strategies for VMware: radical simplification, R&D investments for on-prem and private cloud solutions, and enhancing the overall VMware ecosystem while also focusing things on these areas. What that means, unfortunately for many, is that products are being discontinued right and left. The model is changing. The way that companies interact with VMware is changing. And frankly, it's affected a lot of people in the industry in terms of, you know, their jobs being lost. The discontinuation of products includes the Aria SaaS offerings, Carbon Black, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, also the recent announcement that they're going to divest their end user computing. And this is all a way to streamline VMware and focus it on these bundled suites of private cloud and public, or you know, cloud software. The reactions are mixed, but it is interesting to see this strategy come together. Now that you're starting to see these things, Ned, what is your take overall?
I think there's a lot of risk whenever you make big moves like this. You said bold moves. They are certainly bold, and that's not that's neither good nor bad necessarily. I think part of this was very necessary for VMware to continue to evolve and change. They had stagnated to a certain degree, and their product portfolio had become a bit bloated, and their SKU list had certainly become incomprehensible to the average mortal. So part of what Hock Tan and the team at Broadcom is doing is rationalizing that portfolio, saying instead of having 50 SKUs, where everybody can have what exactly what they want, we're going to narrow this down to the most popular, you know, four or five SKUs, and you can pick amongst those, and that's it. you can't make your own deal. And at the same time, he looked at the product portfolio and said, okay, some of this just needs to go away, and we need to reorganize the stuff that's actually profitable for us, and that makes sense to continue developing and researching for. Now, to a certain degree, a lot of the technologies that VMware sells, specifically like the vSphere portfolio of products, they're mature at this point. I don't expect another vMotion or another vSAN to come out of this. To a certain degree, it's a solved problem, and all the research and development is just going to be incremental improvements. But they definitely have the potential to expand into new opportunities. One of the business units they've created is looking directly at application and network security. And another portfolio is specifically around Tanzu and expanding out into cloud native and Kubernetes type workloads. Those are definitely growth areas that they could work on. But some things had to end up on the chopping floor or on the cutting room floor. And one of those was Carbon Black. So for those who are not familiar with Carbon Black, it's a security product, mostly around endpoint-based security. And they were acquired by VMware. I don't know the exact date on that, but they were acquired by VMware a while ago. And they were never really integrated into the rest of VMware's product portfolio. They were kind of held at arm's length. And for that reason, it was pretty easy to decide to do something different with them. Initial reports were that they were going to be sold off to a private equity firm or just to go independent. And it looks like now they've decided to keep it in-house and fold Carbon Black into Symantec to reinforce and buttress Symantec's endpoint offering. So that's one aspect. Stephen, I know another big area was EUC and their Horizon and Workspace ONE products. Do you have thoughts on what's happening with that?
Well, I think that the EUC situation and the carbon black situation are very similar in that Hoctan specifically, Broadcom generally, found itself with in a few markets that it didn't really want to be in with VMware. As you say, I mean, VMware was really, had a broad skew or a set of SKUs. It had many different products, many different market areas. Some of them, it was more successful than others. I mean, Carbon Black was by all accounts a good product, but was not a world beating product. And I think that maybe they looked at it and said, yeah, this doesn't have the growth that we need. Then there's the end user compute business unit, which has always been sort of a funny kind of stepchild for VMware anyway. I mean, truly, it made a lot of sense for VMware to be in the EUC market because, well, virtualization, you know, I mean, it seems like a good market, but the EUC market really isn't that big. It's not growing. It's one of those things where, if you were going to cut something, it kind of makes sense that that might be what you would cut. But that being said, it is a solid product. It makes a lot of sense. And there are a lot of buyers out there for it. So, okay, so they're going to take that and they're going to spin it off. And specifically, they found a buyer for that. Unlike Carbon Black, the rumors are that they were asking $1 billion for Carbon Black, which is actually a little less than half of what they spent for it just a few years ago. With end user compute, which is again a more stable business with recurring revenue and lots of customers, reports say that they're going to have about $3.8 billion to go take this to a private equity firm, KKR. Now KKR is already in the enterprise space. I know of them because we've covered them here, having acquired Barracuda Networks. We also talked about them acquiring Cloudera and BMC. So there is maybe a little overlap here. But it makes sense that this is maybe where the product would go. But I expect that KKR's moves with the EUC product are going to be very similar to what Hoctan is going to do with the core VMware product, right? They're going to focus it. They're going to, make sure that they're serving the customers. They're getting that recurring revenue. And pretty much that's what they're doing, right?
Yeah. And there's always a concern when private equity buys a technology that they're going to go into rent extraction mode. So product development will basically halt and they will just maintain the customer's base that they have today. And if you're expecting massive improvements and upgrades to the technology, you may want to look elsewhere. That remains to be seen with the Horizon portfolio of products. The VDI space, like you indicated, is not that big and there's not that many major players in it anymore. It's really come down to all the clouds have some form of VDI. AWS has their, I think it's called Workspaces. Azure has Azure Virtual Desktop or Azure VDI. And then Citrix has their own cloud, or you can deploy on one of the other clouds. And then there's Horizon. So it's like four solutions out there are the big heavy hitters. And if you are currently on Horizon, Horizon leveraged a lot of VMware's technology under the hood to do the virtualization portion of things. And it's going to be very difficult to extract what Horizon does from the VMware product as a whole and replatform it on anything else. So if you are a Horizon customer today, you're probably also locked into VMware. And while that was an advantageous arrangement when they were the same company, that may change as your licensing changes for each of those two different products. So definitely time for a little evaluation if you're on the Horizon product today and determining if that's where you want to be in 6 months to a year.
Yeah, and I imagine that some people will decide that they want to move on, but I imagine that some people will say, you know what, this product works for us, it's ingrained, it's something that we're happy with, we're going to continue using it. Frankly, despite all the rage, sounds like I'm going to sing a song. Despite all the rage, I see a lot of people still using VMware vSphere. I see a lot of people still using Horizon. I see a lot of people still using BMC and Barracuda. And a lot of these products, Symantec, that people have said, private equity or Broadcom's buying these. It's the end of the world as we know it. Again, singing a song. It's the end of the world as we know it. We better switch to a different product. People don't really switch. A lot of the time, these products are good. They do the job. They're what the people need. Frankly, in some cases, you know, you look at Horizon, you look at vSphere, you look at Barracuda. These are very good products, maybe even best of breed products for their specific market segment. So why would you switch just because you're mad because a private equity company bought it? That doesn't make any sense.
Usually the loudest voices around switching are the poor admins that are responsible for managing this stuff. And they're like, oh God, it's just going to get worse. And they get really concerned. But the people who actually make the decision to whether or not to switch have to do a financial analysis of the switching costs to move from, say, vSphere to Nutanix or Scale or something else. And that switching cost can be extremely high. And if switching it isn't going to fulfill some sort of business requirement, and the new licensing agreement isn't particularly onerous, then the decision is going to be, no, we're just going to stay on this platform that we know that works and not incur this additional cost that's providing no business benefit. You're just doing this out of spite. Your CFO is going to go, no, that makes absolutely no sense to me. We're staying on VMware unless it becomes painful enough not to.
Yeah, honestly, most good CFOs and COOs don't do things out of spite. Now, clearly some CEOs do, yes. But especially CFOs, they're kind of not spiteful. They're kind of like, you know, no, this makes sense. This is what we're going to do. And I think that that's roughly what's happening here. I do expect these products to change and evolve as the market evolves. I expect that the market will maybe move past some of these products. You know, Carbon Black never really found the footing that VMware expected it to have. And so, well, that's that. But overall, you know, things don't change. I had the experience this last week at AI Field Day of spending a lot of time with a lot of analysts in the industry, as well as a lot of end users and industry insiders. And it was interesting. The talk, of course, was a lot of the talk was about VMware and what's going on with VMware. And the interesting thing I found was the statement one of the people made, which is essentially all the customers that Broadcom wanted to keep have already been contacted. They've already built a transition plan. They've already adapted licensing. They've already figured out how they're going to continue working with them. And from what I'm hearing, those customers are actually pretty happy with what Broadcom is doing. In many cases, they're streamlining licensing, they're giving them a better product for the same amount of money, probably not less money. But they're, you know, basically they're happy with the transition. I'm even hearing from some VMware insiders that are happy with the transition. They're basically saying this makes more sense. I see what we're doing here. It doesn't feel like we're going in all sorts of directions. Of course, I'm hearing from VMware insiders who are very, very not happy with the transition because they've lost their job or they've lost the product that was their baby. And I feel so much sympathy to them. But I would say that overall, what I'm hearing from insiders and analysts reflects what we were just talking about here, which is, frankly, things change. Hock Tan is making a lot of changes at VMware, and not all of those changes are bad. Let's take a look at some of the things that are coming up this week. Now, as you heard, Tom Hollingsworth is not joining me today for the rundown. That's because he's hosting Networking Field Day live in California today. I would love it for you to tune in, check out those presentations live on LinkedIn, or just look at our YouTube channel to see those. We've got Forward Networks, we've got Aviz Networks, we've got Niall presenting as well. And also check out the event calendar of upcoming events. Our next event is Security Field Day. And that has actually we've got some interesting things going on there because, of course, as part of the Futurum Group, we've got a connection with analysts, but we've also now got a great connection with Shira Rubinoff, who is running a Cybersphere as a business unit, which is really focused on cybersecurity. It's going to be great to have Shira involved with our Security Field Day event. I will say also, this will be interesting to you, Ned, we are launching an app dev or DevOps field day. We actually already have companies signed up to present at part of that. And we're working with Paul Nashawaty within Futurum to organize that. I think it's going to be really big. It's going to be cool for us field day to have a true next generation application focused event. So keep an eye out for the announcement of that. Also, I want to call out that we recently launched season 6 of our Utilizing Tech podcast, which is our Monday podcast here at Tech Field Day. That is now a few episodes deep. And yes, You guessed it, we're focusing on AI. So it's once again utilizing AI. Check that out in your favorite podcast application. It's a great way to keep up to date with all of the announcements and that are currently happening in the AI market. Thank you so much for watching the Gestalt IT Rundown today, now part of the Futurum Group. You can catch new episodes every Wednesday on our YouTube channel, which is just Gestalt IT Video, or of course, in your favorite podcast application, just look for Gestalt IT Rundown. We'll be back next Wednesday to talk about all of the IT news from the week that was, and hopefully we'll see Tom Hollingsworth's smiling face again, though Ned, I really appreciate you joining us today.
Happy to be here, Stephen.
It's great to have you. Thank you. Until then, for myself, for Tom and Ned, and all of us here in the Gestalt IT and Futurum Group family, here's wishing you and yours a chocolatey and toothache-free day.